Hi, this is Mike Ferguson.
And this is Mike Morford.
And we'd like to invite you to listen to our podcast, Criminology.
Launched in 2017, we've covered a variety of strange cases, from murders to missing persons.
We dive into solved and unsolved cases in both the U.S. and abroad.
Some of the cases are ones you may not have heard of, like the Washington Strangler or the Canal Murders.
Other cases we cover are some of the most historic in true crime, like the Lindbergh kidnapping or the Tylenol murders. We also dive into cases that are currently breaking, like the Fort Hood murder of Vanessa Guillen.
Sometimes you'll hear from people directly connected to the cases, like our recent episode that included an exclusive interview with the former brother-in-law of the Golden State Killer, Joseph DeAngelo.
There are plenty of episodes of Criminology for you to binge on, and new episodes come out every Saturday night. Subscribe to Criminology right now, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Skip ahead about 40 seconds if the resources I've been giving bother you. There is a crisis text line set up for those suffering from anxiety or depression. Text 741-741 for help. If you are experiencing suicidal thoughts, please call the National Suicide Hotline at 1-800-273-TALK or 8255. If you are suffering from domestic violence, please call 1-800-799-SAFE or 7233 or dial 911. The Trevor Project has a hotline for young LGBTQ people who are struggling. Call 1-866-488-7386. Remember, you are not alone. I'll have international resources as well as these U.S. numbers in today's show notes. Southern Fried True Crime covers cases that are not suitable for young listeners, and there may also be some explicit language used. Today's episode will include violence against children and suicidal ideation. Listener discretion is strongly advised. We think of small rural communities as the heartland of our country, far away from the crowded big cities where high crime rates are just a part of life. Small towns feel insulated from real evil. In his genre-breaking true crime novel, In Cold Blood, Truman Capote wrote, "Imagination, of course, can open any door. Turn the key and let terror walk right in." But he didn't need imagination to tell the story of the Clutter family murders. The horror of the violence that came to a small rural town in Kansas was shockingly real. That's why In Cold Blood became such a sensation, a peek behind the curtain of a private tragedy. Today's case is similar in some ways. A family in the small rural town of Warsaw, Kentucky, was brutally attacked in August of 2002. A small, tight-knit community was left reeling. But the attack on Carolyn Marksberry and her children was beyond the pale. More vicious than what happened to the Clutters, even though there were survivors. The monster who brutalized the young mother and her children was surprisingly remorseful. He seems human. And that makes this crime so much harder to accept. We are used to pure evil in these kinds of stories. We are not used to a man who accepts full responsibility and begs for forgiveness. Maybe we need him to be a monster because it's the only way we can understand his crimes. Welcome to episode 108, Evil with a Conscience, Marco Chapman. Warsaw is the county seat of Gallatin County, Kentucky. It began as a landing on the Ohio River in 1798, called the Great Landing. Colonel Robert Johnson surveyed the land and built a road, creating a busy shipping port. He wanted to name the new town Fredericksburg after his hometown in Virginia, but the U.S. Postal Service rejected the use of the name because a town in Washington County, Kentucky, had already taken that name. Today it's called Fredericktown and is southeast of Bardstown. So legend has it, the name was suggested by a riverboat captain who was reading Thaddeus of Warsaw by Jane Porter during the time when the small city was founded. Warsaw is home to the oldest operating courthouse in the state, and it's on the National Register of Historic Places. Warsaw is also the location of what is known as the Great River Tragedy. The collision of the United States and America steamboats resulted in the deaths of 80 people in 1868. Warsaw is situated on the banks of the Ohio River between Cincinnati, Lexington, and Louisville. Despite its proximity to metropolitan areas, it is a very small town. There are an estimated 1,700 residents in Warsaw, and the population has never gone over 2,000. The town's website boasts that Warsaw is a quiet, unchanging community. A quick search for jobs in the area will direct you to surrounding cities. There are jobs for truck deliveries, warehouse workers, and some clerical work. And of course, there are several farms in Warsaw. If you click on the farms for sale, you will see the beautiful rolling hills of bluegrass that Kentucky is famous for. The city of Warsaw's Facebook page is charming. You see many posts for local events and for homegrown food, especially tomatoes this time of year, the dog days of summer. It seems like a welcoming, safe, and lovely place to raise children. Carolyn Marksberry was known as a great mom who would do anything for her kids. She had three children, Shelby, Cody, and Courtney. She spelled all of her kids' names starting with the letter C, like her name. Their father's name also began with a C, Kurt Sharon. The couple had divorced, but Kurt was still very involved in his children's lives. Carolyn had married another man with a C name in 2001, Charles Marksberry, known as Chuck. He quickly adapted as a stepfather, and the young family was happy and well-known in the small town of Warsaw. Carolyn was a Girl Scouts troop leader. 6-year-old Cody, 7-year-old Shelby, and 10-year-old Courtney all attended the Gallatin County Elementary School. A neighbor later told the Courier-Journal that they were great kids who loved to ride bikes, inline skate, and play soccer. 37-year-old Carolyn was appointed as Warsaw City Clerk on August 12th of 2002. She had a bachelor's degree in administration from the University of Kentucky. Chuck Marksberry worked for North American Stainless out of Ghent, Kentucky, about 6 minutes from Warsaw. And during that summer of 2002, he was sent to Spain for job training. Carolyn was friendly with her neighbors, particularly Debbie Peace Williamson, who is called Carolyn's best friend in court papers. I've seen her name in newspapers as Williamson and as Peace, but I found her father's obituary to finally tie the names together to make sure it's the same woman. That August of 2002, Debbie had been sleeping on Carolyn's couch a lot. Reports later said that Carolyn was advising her to break up with her boyfriend of 2 years, Mark Chapman. Mark had been a visitor to the Marksberry home, playing cards with Debbie, Carolyn, and Chuck, and he also often did odd jobs for them around the house. But that summer, friends said that Mark had become abusive to Debbie. Later, friends and neighbors said that despite the rumors of abuse, 30-year-old Mark Chapman had seemed like a quiet man. He worked construction and used to coach soccer. He had a boyish face that hid the violence brimming close to the surface. I'm going to pause now for a short commercial break. Marco Allen Chapman was born on September 4th, 1971, in Cabin Creek, West Virginia. I've seen a few newspapers that said one of his victims referred to him as Mark, and I've also seen him sign a letter that way, so that's how I will refer to him. Mark was a native of West Virginia, a border state to Kentucky, where he had a sad upbringing. His young life has been characterized as chaotic, which I think is putting it mildly. Both of his parents suffered from depression, serious alcohol abuse, and mental disorders. They were violent towards each other and Mark. Mark's mother once hit him in the head with a cast iron skillet, and his father routinely beat him unconscious. Mark later revealed that his father also sexually abused him. He also reported being molested by a babysitter. He started drinking and smoking pot by the age of 8, and he dropped out of school when he was 14 in his 8th grade year. He was using PCP and LSD, It was then, at 14 years old, that Mark first tried to die by suicide. He tried to hang himself, and he also cut his wrists. He later said he continued to contemplate suicide on a daily basis. As a teenager, Mark went to juvenile prison, though it is unclear for what. While there, it was reported that he was almost gang raped. When he was released, Mark's drug and alcohol abuse worsened. He started binge drinking and using heroin, crack, cocaine, and meth. Andy began to suffer from acute psychological turmoil. He had a grocery list of diagnoses: substance dependence, chronic depression, PTSD, intrusive thoughts, odd sensory experiences, including visual and auditory hallucinations, dramatic mood swings, troubling thoughts and dreams, and personality disorders. He reportedly had symptoms of both borderline and antisocial disorders. The Advocate Messenger newspaper reported that federal court records showed that Mark had pled guilty to a bank robbery in Texas in 1994. And then, 6 years later, in the year 2000, he was found guilty in the assault of a University of Virginia student. It isn't clear exactly when Mark moved to Kentucky, but his last address was on Beaver Road in Boone County, not Gallatin County or Warsaw. Regardless, he had been dating Debbie Williamson for almost 2 years in August of 2002 when she broke up with him. Newspapers would later report that he had found out that Carolyn Marksberry had urged her friend Debbie to break up with him. But this was never used as a motive for the crime. On August 23, 2002, Mark left the home of a family friend in Union, Kentucky at around 2:30 in the morning. He drove to an ATM and withdrew money using a card in Debbie's name. By 4 a.m., he was in Warsaw. There are differing reports on how he got into the home. Most say he simply knocked on the door at 4:10 in the morning, and when Carolyn answered, he asked her if he could use the phone. Once inside, he threatened her with a knife, some reports saying that he punched her in the stomach first to knock her down. Then he took her to the bedroom and bound her to her bed with duct tape and her vacuum cleaner cord. He had come armed with the duct tape and a knife. He cut off Carolyn's clothes and then raped her. And then he began stabbing her, so many times that his knife broke and he went to the kitchen to get another one. 6-year-old Cody Sharon heard his mother's screams and went to her bedroom door. She told him he had had a bad dream and to go back to bed and leave his light on. Instead, he walked to his sister's room and woke his oldest sister, Courtney. "I think Mom needs help," he whispered. "Mom's hurt." As they walked into the hall, they ran into Mark, who said that their mom was hurt and they needed to call 911. He started leading them to the kitchen, and then he suddenly turned around and stabbed 10-year-old Courtney in the chest, neck, and face. She fell to the ground and pretended to be dead, but she could see out of the corner of her eye when Mark turned around and stabbed her little brother Cody. She watched him stab him in the back and slit his throat. Then Mark went into the girl's bedroom and stabbed 7-year-old Shelby. She had many deep, defensive wounds, but he also slit the little girl's throat, and she died within minutes. When Mark was attacking Shelby, Courtney crawled over to Cody and told him she was going to get help. He was still alive and begged her not to leave, but she had to. She had to get help. She was later haunted by this memory and felt responsible for her little brother's death. According to the autopsy, he bled out within a few minutes. Courtney ran out the back door, and when the door slammed, Mark heard it and decided to run. Courtney ran through the backyard, bleeding, to one neighbor's home, but didn't get an answer. So she ran to Debbie Williamson's home. Debbie called 911 and ran back out of the house to see if she could help Carolyn and the kids. Carolyn had lain there listening to her children's screams. When she heard the door slam, she thought Mark had left the house. She gnawed through the vacuum cords and got free. She had to crawl over her son's body, and then, bloody and nude, crawled across the street to her neighbor's home. She then banged her head on the door to wake him up. When he came out, she kept saying, "Mark Chapman, Mark Chapman." The neighbor, Mike Scalacta, told the Courier-Journal that Carolyn had duct tape on her wrists and she dropped half in and half out of his door. About this time, Debbie ran up to his house. She'd already called the police. He ran to get a bedsheet to wrap Carolyn in, and when he got back, EMTs were already loading her into an ambulance. He said she was crying, "My children, my children," and that he promised her he would go get them. He walked up to the Marksberry house, and the police chief was walking out and reporting on his radio that the scene appeared to be a multiple homicide, so he backed off. Mike told the Courier-Journal, quote, "It took a lot of courage and strength for her to make it across the street." Luckily, Courtney's wounds were not as severe, and she was able to tell the police who the attacker was and that he was driving a Dodge truck. Once police had a name, an interstate manhunt began. Mark Chapman was known to the police. He was still on parole for the bank robbery in Texas. He had served 4 years in a federal penitentiary before moving back to West Virginia to serve his parole. I'm not sure why the October 2000 assault on the University of Virginia student didn't violate his parole. That part is never made clear in court records or newspapers. Maybe it was a jurisdictional issue, but considering he was on parole for a federal crime, you would think they would have uncovered his whole criminal record easily. A former employer called the Kentucky State Police and said he thought Mark would try to make it back to Cabin Creek, West Virginia. Sheriff's deputies from both Kentucky and West Virginia were out looking for Mark's vehicle. Just 6 hours after the attack, a deputy in Shrewsbury, West Virginia, saw a Dodge matching the description at a gas station. The deputy pulled into the gas station parking lot and identified Marco Chapman. He had just left the Cabin Creek house his employer warned police about. While being arrested, Mark asked the officer to shoot him in the head to be, quote, "done and over with it." He told the officer that the only thing that would help him would be a bullet or the electric chair. Mark also told the officer that he could have and would have killed himself when he was arrested by taking sleeping pills he had with him. He was quickly extradited back to Kentucky to face charges for his vicious attack on the Marksberry family. Back in Warsaw, Kentucky, Carolyn was taken to the hospital in critical but stable condition. She had 15 stab wounds to her neck, chest, arm, and fingers. Carolyn went through 5 hours of surgery. When she came out, she was told the horrific news that her two youngest children had been killed in the attacks. Courtney was also taken to the hospital, reportedly in fair condition. She was released on August 24th and went to stay with her great-grandparents. Courtney also learned that her younger sister Shelby had been killed as well. She couldn't stop talking to her family about what had happened in that house on August 23rd. Her aunt, Brenda Razor, spoke to the press and said that the family just listened to the little girl. They didn't ask her anything and just waited for her to talk. She said, quote, "But I think she saw a lot." And this is where the differing stories of that horrible night came from. Courtney said that Mark knew where the family hid a key and snuck into the house. Carolyn said he knocked on the door. Court records say he simply entered the house. But the detective who testified at Mark's first hearings said that he knocked on the door. I think it's possible Courtney was so traumatized she just didn't know. She didn't hear the door, so maybe she assumed that was how he got in. She went on a local news station with bandages on her neck and ear to send a get-well message to her mother. Carolyn was released from the hospital on August 31st on what would have been Shelby's 8th birthday. And on the same day, a memorial service was held for Shelby and Cody at the Gallatin County Elementary School. Carolyn was too distraught to attend, but hundreds of people attended the service, including her husband, Chuck. Kurt Sharon, the father of Shelby and Cody, was still in shock and also too upset to attend. Chuck Marksberry told the Kentucky Inquirer that his wife was scared to death. Quote, "She's petrified to be left alone. She never wants to step foot in our house again. She is waking up screaming, having nightmares." Carolyn was able to attend the joint funeral of her two youngest children on September 1st. Shelby Ann and Cody Wade Sharon were laid to rest in the St. Joseph Catholic Cemetery in Warsaw, Kentucky. I'm going to pause now to hear a word from today's sponsors. Even though I love to cook, I hate meal planning. It's time-consuming and complicating trying to satisfy the whole family on a budget. But Every Plate does it all for me now by planning, shopping, and delivering fresh ingredients right to my door. Even at the regular price, Every Plate is up to 58% cheaper than other major meal kits. Every Plate's recipes are simple yet savory, satisfying my whole family while saving me time and money. It takes about 30 minutes to cook an Every Plate meal, saving me time that is better spent enjoying dinner with my family. Last night, we had the sweet sriracha glazed meatballs with roasted carrots and jasmine rice. And if you had told me my stepson would eat anything with sriracha, I would have called you a liar. But he practically hogged the whole pan. Tonight, I'm making the creamy Cajun chicken sausage penne pasta with Monterey Jack cheese, and I'll be fixing my plate first. Experience full plates and a fuller wallet with America's Best Value Meal Kit. Get 3 weeks of Every Plate meals for only $2.99 per meal by going to everyplate.com and entering code 3SOUTHERNFRIED. That's 3 weeks of Every Plate meals for only $2.99 per meal just by going to everyplate.com and entering the code 3SOUTHERNFRIED. Sometimes my anxiety can make me just freeze up. It interferes with my productivity. Is there something bothering you? BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. They will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. BetterHelp has over 3,000 licensed therapists in all 50 states, treating depression, anxiety, stress, trauma, grief, and other issues that so many of us suffer from. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. The service is also available to clients worldwide. From your phone, laptop, or tablet, you can connect with a professional counselor via text, chat, phone, or video and start communicating with your counselor in under 24 hours. You can send a message to your counselor at any time. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, and you can schedule weekly sessions with your counselor by video or phone, whichever makes you feel more comfortable. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so it is easy and free to change counselors if you want to. And anything you share is confidential. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and there is even financial aid available. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/southern. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/southern. True crime is like a puzzle. Every piece you uncover reveals a bigger picture, and it's thrilling when it all comes together. When I'm not researching or writing about crime, my brain still craves a challenge. That's why I love Best Fiends. It's the fun and exciting puzzle adventure you can play anytime, anywhere. No Wi-Fi, no worries. You don't need the internet to play. It's been fun playing with friends I haven't gotten to see much because we are socially distancing. I love to connect with them over a game, and I love to whip up on them even more. We are a competitive crew, so we love playing Best Fiends and using the leaderboard. I've reached level 445, the Mushroom Valley, and found a new fiend named Bo, and I've upgraded more than half of my fiends to level 17. I play when I have time, like in the mornings when I'm drinking coffee on my deck. I love collecting the cute characters, and I'm always excited for a new monthly themed challenge. Best Fiends has thousands of levels ready, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips. You can even play offline. With over 100 million downloads and tons of five-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. In the beginning, Mark told the police that he and Carolyn had been in a sexual relationship for around a year. He said he knew Carolyn's husband was working overseas. He told police that he went to Carolyn's house armed with a knife. His plan was to have consensual sex with Carolyn and then rob her afterwards. He said they did have consensual sex, but when Mark said he was going to rob her, Carolyn, quote, raised all kinds of hell. He said that's when he bound Carolyn with a vacuum cleaner cord and gagged her with a duct tape. Mark confessed that he stabbed Carolyn and then the three screaming children. Later, in early December of 2004, before he went to trial, Mark told the truth. At around 4:10 a.m. on August 23, 2002, he said he knocked on the door of the Marksbury residence. Carolyn opened the door and he asked her if he could use the phone. She said yes and let him in. He said he walked in with his duffel bag, holding duct tape and at least one knife. He said he put the knife to Carolyn's throat and told her to give him all of her money. While still holding the knife to Carolyn's throat, he took the cash and credit cards from her purse. Then he took Carolyn to the bedroom, tied her up, and cut her clothes off. He admitted he raped Carolyn Marksbury and then stabbed her repeatedly. Twice during the stabbing of Carolyn, Mark had to go to the kitchen and get new knives because the ones he was using kept breaking. When he thought Carolyn was dead, Mark left the room and found Courtney and Cody in the hall. He said he stabbed Courtney, and when he thought she fell dead, he stabbed 6-year-old Cody. And then he moved into the girls' bedroom and murdered 7-year-old Shelby before he fled the house. Although Mark never gave a motive for this attack, prosecutor Linda Talley Smith has said that Mark was coming off a crack cocaine binge. Linda believes Mark chose Carolyn as his target, partly because he knew her husband was out of town. And of course, the main assumption is that Mark attacked Carolyn because she convinced Debbie to break up with him. In a preliminary hearing on September 10th, an attending reporter from the Courier-Journal wrote that Mark's body shook and he sobbed as he listened to the wounds that he was accused of inflicting on Carolyn and her children. On September 25th, 2002, Mark was charged with 2 counts of capital murder, 2 counts of attempted murder, 1 count of rape in the first degree, 1 count of burglary in the first degree, 1 count of robbery in the first degree, and 1 count of being a persistent felony offender in the second degree. On January 15th, 2004, before a pretrial hearing, Mark tried to escape police custody. He managed to unshackle his legs and run across a parking lot. His hope was that an officer would shoot him. He reportedly yelled, shoot me," to the deputy. He was tackled after only making it 10 yards. It makes sense that Mark would try to get an officer to kill him. He said he would not commit suicide because, quote, "I guess it's kind of my Christian upbringing. Suicide is unforgivable. I figure if I'm not doing it myself, it's not a suicide." This statement makes it sound as if he believes rape and murder are forgivable in the eyes of the Lord. Leading up to his trial, Mark underwent multiple competency evaluations and hearings. Dr. Stephen Free found in the first evaluation that he did not suffer from a thought disorder, psychotic dysfunction, organic impairment, or brain damage. However, he said Mark was suffering from polysubstance dependence, chronic depression, and PTSD. Dr. Free also found that Mark possibly suffered from both antisocial personality disorder and borderline personality disorder. However, the psychiatrist still concluded that Marco Chapman was competent to stand trial. After his first competency ruling, Mark wrote a 4-page letter to the court saying he wanted to dismiss his attorneys, waive a jury trial and sentencing, plead guilty to all of the charges, and be sentenced to death. He said he was sorry for what he did, and he was, quote, "willingly ready to accept the sentence of death because that is the only acceptable sentence for the crimes I have done against the Marksberries and humanity itself. After receiving this letter, the court ordered Mark to undergo a second competency evaluation to see if he was able to make those kinds of requests. The same psychiatrist, Dr. Stephen Free, conducted the second evaluation in October of 2004. He concluded that while Mark was still competent, he might not want to be executed if he received proper mental health treatment. He said he believed Mark's decision to want to be executed was, quote, colored by his history of depressed mood and his situation. After hearing from the psychiatrist again, the court said they would not consider Mark's requests until he underwent 30 days of treatment and examination. Following his 30 days of treatment, Dr. Free conducted a third competency evaluation. He said that he had prescribed Zoloft to Mark, but it did not change his depression or his mental health in general. For a third time, he said Mark was competent to stand trial. The judge asked Mark if he still wanted to go through with his requests, and he said yes. The judge allowed Mark to dismiss his attorneys, plead guilty, and request the death penalty. The attorneys for the public defender's office who had represented Mark felt this was the wrong decision and that Mark should not be able to make it for himself. They said Mark wasn't criminally responsible at the time of the attacks and that he wanted to commit suicide and was getting the court to do it for him. Mark Chapman became what is known as a death penalty volunteer. There are extensive studies on both the psychology and legality of criminals who choose death for themselves. However, Mark may have dismissed his attorneys over their objections, but the judge ordered them that they were appointed to act as his standby counsel. On December 7, 2004, Mark pled guilty to all charges, 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of attempted murder, first-degree rape, first-degree robbery, first-degree burglary, and 1 count of being a persistent felony offender in the second degree. On December 14, 2004, Mark was told he was free to choose death as his sentence. He said he was sorry for what he did, although he claimed he didn't remember exactly what he did. The judge told Mark he thought it was a mistake for him to waive his right to a trial, but he had no legal authority to stop him. Mark got his wish and was sentenced to death for both murders. He also received life for each of the attempted murder, rape, robbery, and burglary counts. Even though the court accepted Mark's plea and sentenced him to death, his journey to execution was not a straight path. The Department of Public Advocacy filed an appeal on Mark's behalf. The appeal questioned if Mark could legally enter a plea agreement to forgo a jury trial and sentencing and volunteer for the death penalty. In August 2007, the Supreme Court of Kentucky ruled in Mark's favor. He could legally plead guilty and request the death penalty. Following the Supreme Court of Kentucky's decision, Mark filed a petition requesting that no one be able to file motions or appeals on his behalf. He said he would undergo another competency evaluation to prove he was sane and capable of asking to be executed. He was again evaluated, and in October of 2008, the court ruled that Mark could be executed. They set the execution date for November 21, 2008. In response, the Department of Public Advocacy filed 2 motions for a stay of execution. Mark filed a response saying that these 2 motions for stay were filed against his wishes and knowledge. He wrote, quote, "So I ask this court one last time to dismiss all motions and allow my execution to go forward as planned, without any further delays or proceedings." On November 17, 2008, Mark received another competency test, his 5th and final. He was again found competent. 2 days later, the Supreme Court of Kentucky dismissed the Department of Public Advocacy's 2 motions for stay. Marco Chapman could now officially be executed. On November 21st, Mark ate a 32-ounce sirloin steak, butterfly shrimp, a salad with ranch dressing, sweet tea, and a piece of banana cream pie as his last meal. Before he was executed, Warden Tom Simpson read Mark's statement aloud in front of the witness gallery. He wrote, quote, "I, Marco Chapman, have only a few things to say as my last words on earth. First and foremost, I have to say I'm truly sorry to Carolyn and Courtney Marksberry for the crimes and sins I committed to them. And with all my heart and soul, I'm sorry with ending the life of two beautiful children, Cody and Shelby Marksberry. I know the ending of my life will never bring them back and let them have the life they deserve, but hopefully my death will give some sort of peace to Carolyn and Courtney Marksberry. I don't know why I did the things I did, and I know the hate of me over that night must be overwhelming. But Carolyn and Courtney, you have to know that wasn't who I was or am. I am not a monster, even though I did a monstrous, evil thing. That is why I give my life willingly, as well as quickly, in hopes that you know how truly sorry I am. I hurt and ache daily for the loss I've created in the Marksberry's family, but I hurt as well. After all, before that dreadful night, I thought of Carolyn as a friend, and Courtney, Cody, and Shelby like nieces and nephews, because I did and still care for them very deeply. I'm sure to Carolyn and Courtney, what happened that night was your worst nightmare imaginable, but it is also mine, and for that I have to say I'm sorry again. I have no right to ask for forgiveness and don't intend to, but I want you to know I believe wholeheartedly that Cody and Shelby are safe in heaven. I don't know if I deserve heaven after what I did, but I pray with all my heart that I find some sort of peace and happiness after my last breath. I pray daily not just for me, but for Carolyn and Courtney, that even though they have the right to hate me, I just hope they don't live with hate in their hearts. With that said, I close my eyes in prayer that Carolyn and Courtney find a type of peace they can live with and can also find love and happiness in their lives. As for my family and loved ones, just know I miss and love each and every one, but I know it's my right to give my life for the lives I've shattered and ended. I hope and pray with all that I am that you remember who I was and not what I did. Don't be sad over my death, but relieved that I have found peace. Just know I'm with you all each and every day in my heart, and I will see you all again someday. By now, but never forever. With all my love and sorrow, Mark Chapman." After he signed his name, he wrote, "I'm sorry to everyone," underlining the words three times. After Mark's statement was read aloud, Warden Simpson asked Mark if he had any final words. He looked at the witness gallery and, with his voice shaking and tears in his eyes, said, "Carolyn, I want you to know I am truly sorry. I don't know why it happened. This is the man I am, willing to give my life." At 7:34 p.m., Mark was executed by lethal injection. He was the first Kentucky inmate executed since 1999, and the third inmate ever executed in Kentucky. And no one has been executed in Kentucky since Marco Chapman. Following Mark's execution, Carolyn put out a statement of her own. It said, quote, "I believe the tears shed today should be for the victims, not Marco Chapman. Marco Chapman committed the crimes, accepted responsibility for those crimes, and then decided his own fate. This event brings only one measure of closure. Justice may have been served, but any personal satisfaction will likely be fleeting, for nothing can truly bring my children back to me, except for our memories and the heart-filled bond that only a mother can know. Perhaps now, though, not only can our family and community start to heal, but Cody and Shelby can truly rest in peace." Before the scheduled execution, prosecutor Linda Talley Smith called Marco Chapman evil with a conscience. She told the Kentucky Post, quote, "He accepted responsibility without making any excuses, which is very unusual. He had a lot of remorse." I've never covered a murderer who asked for the death penalty before. And before this case, I didn't realize it was considered a phenomenon in psychiatry and to death penalty activists. Per deathpenaltyinfo.org, as of November 19th, 149 defendants have volunteered for the death penalty since it was reinstated in 1976. This includes serial killer Eileen Wuornos and the Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh. I only found one woman on the list besides Warnos. And there is a small quote next to each name. There are a few who indicated remorse, but mostly they seemed to just want the process over with. They knew they would never win an appeal, and they didn't want to sit on death row. I believe it is suicide by execution. And we can debate the morality of the death penalty at length, but I suppose the question is, if a defendant is sentenced to death, should they be allowed to refuse appeals? To be honest, I'm not sure how I feel about this. These people have gone through competency hearings, and they have also committed some of the most heinous crimes known to man. I think Mark Chapman is different because he chose to plead guilty and chose the death penalty. He had wanted to die since he was a teenager. Did he brutalize Carolyn and murder her children to set his death in motion? Because as an adult, he became more religious and believed suicide was unforgivable? Even if he did choose death by the judicial system, he did not give Carolyn, Courtney, Cody, or Shelby a choice. He chose to take all of them out of this world. It was a miracle that Carolyn and Courtney survived. And now they have to live with the trauma of Mark Chapman's choices and the Cody and Shelby-shaped holes in their lives. Southern Fried True Crime is written and produced by me, Erica Kelly. Additional research and writing for this episode was done by Haley Gray. The original graphic art is by Coley Horner, and Southern Fried's original music is by Rob Harrison of Gamma Radio. Southern Fried's audio is edited and mixed by Ches Gray of Gray Multimedia. Thank you to listener Kelly Tyree for suggesting this case. I am taking next week off because I'm having back surgery. There will be another episode released on the 28th, but then I will be off the next week. I have planned ahead so that I have 2 full weeks of recovery, but you will still have an episode in between. Don't forget to subscribe to the other show I narrate, Fetal Abduction, a True Crime Podcast. I will have 2 episodes recorded of that before surgery as well. And I'd like to remind you to come join my Facebook group. We share memes and have a lot of laughs. It's a really fun community, and we'd love to have you. Hashtag no shit ass is allowed. If you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and please tell a friend or rate and review on iTunes. I'm also on most large platforms like Stitcher and Spotify, as well as Stitcher Premium, where you can listen ad-free. If you have any case suggestions, please email southernfriedtruecrime@gmail.com. I do not accept case suggestions on social media private messages. But please feel free to reach out by email. Not only do I get my most interesting and little-known cases from listener suggestions, I love hearing from you guys. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Wash your hands, stop touching your face, and y'all take care.